Well, I first, David and Phil, I'd like to thank you for the opportunities. And it's not often that they let the plumber out to speak, and particularly to a group like this, given the regulatory environment and the political environment and the subject of the day. Generally, they try to keep me caged, but I agreed to do this because I think it's the most important issue in the industry facing Australia today. There's no doubt about it. And it's going to be about choices. And the choices that are made are going to cast the future of this nation in terms of its broadband capability, things like distance learning, healthcare, and how it's positioned globally. And I speak from a lot of experience in building networks, operating them, and from time to time being the marketeer, the head of retail markets. And I think that, you know, whether it's your economy, the safety, the competitiveness, jobs, all of that is tied to the communications infrastructure of a nation. And there's a lot of debate about the various carriers, and everybody makes their own choices. But there's some fundamentals that must be followed. And I think as the debate heats up, and it will heat up, that people should sit back, and particularly audiences like this, as well educated as you are, and your ability to analyze big reports, is there's fundamentals, and the fundamentals don't change. Fundamentals of economics, fundamentals of physics, and fundamentals of markets. And when you sit back and you look at that, I think you'll come to maybe a different set of conclusions than are so widely reported in the various media. So, Telstra. Telstra wants to build the national broadband network. We wanted to build it a little over 3 years ago. We announced in November of 2005 a plan, and now we're some 3 years later, and in many cases, not much closer to being able to build. You know, the start of the construction of the new network, whoever ends up building it, is sometime into the distant future. That has cost this country and the companies that will build it a lot of money. Things are a lot more expensive today. They're not less expensive. Because when you look at the components of how this thing will be built, labor has not gone down anywhere. The cost of heavy equipment, if you can get it, has not gone down. And most of the manufacturers in the technology space are suffering from the global economy, and they're shutting down capacity and reducing capacity to adjust to the spend of carriers globally. Our interest is genuine. We have, 3 years ago we had a plan, and we have spent the last 3 years modifying, refining, honing, adjusting for technology change, and doing more detailed analysis of how to build it, who we should use to build it, what services could be offered over it, and then a clear technology upgrade path as to where we saw the technology roadmap and what the demand for communications was going to be far out into the future. So we have world-class capability. We've demonstrated that. Australia, and I travel the world as many as you do, has the best wireless 3G network anywhere. Depth of coverage and speeds. And two of our competitors are in the process of upgrading their networks and building broader coverage as well. And the mobile space isn't interfered with quite as much as the fixed space is. So capital will follow where it can get a return. We're configuring this network, if we build it, so it's upgradable. The issue about fiber to the premise or fiber to the home. The way we've designed the network, we have the ability to extend it where it's economically feasible to do so. There are some industry experts that have said we should build, or whoever builds, should build fiber to the premise to start with. That is a fallacy. The economics do not work. Go to your homes and take a walk this evening and ask yourself what the tolerance level is going to be and what the costs are to tear up your driveways. I think you call your yards gardens here. You know, mom's rose bushes. You name it, the costs are going to be huge. And they are. We've done that once before in our past. and the costs were a total cost blowout. We were successful in the marketplace, but the economics didn't work. I personally would not want to have to do that again in brownfield areas. We build fiber to the premise today under commercial terms with various developers, as do others. So in a new area or a greenfield, it's economically feasible. It's not in the brownfield or existing developed areas unless you think you're going to have enough market demand to pay for it. Our network is going to be configured so that the speeds are between 25 and 50 megabits to 65 to 75% of the population, and 12 to 20 megabits for the remainder up to 90% of the population. That's the current plan of record that we've engineered and designed to. We actually looked at 98% fiber to the node. And without revealing the cost, there's an exponential curve on the cost to drive fiber that deep. And it's going to cost, no matter who builds it, that kind of money. Because you know what? When you look at the manufacturers from a cost standpoint, they generally aren't that much different. So it's going to be labor. It's going to be the cost of fiber. It's going to be access. And it's going to be cutover costs. And it's going to be a very big project. We want to build an open access network. We're serious about that. I'm all for competition. You know, I would tell you, and I'm the guy that is responsible for Telstra's networks, Optus has a very good network in their HFC. When they put that one in, they had the foresight to make it two-way capable. But it's not utilized for all sorts of regulatory issues, and from their perspective, I'm sure financial issues. But we are not, in our proposal, saying nobody else can build. We welcome the competition. We're going to design it, develop it, build it ourselves. Yes, we'll use contractors, but it'll be built using Telstra's expertise. We'll build it to world-class security standards, and security is a very big issue. You don't have any idea, unless you're in national security agencies, just how much and how unsafe this world really is, and how critical communications and data are to protecting the various societies around the world. We'll deliver it on time, on plan, and on budget. Now, we've been clear from day one. We have an obligation to our shareowners. Telstra is not owned by the government, and that is something that's been really hard for people to understand. There's a mentality that the government still owns Telstra. They do not. Our shareowners paid for it. They put their capital up. They expect a return on it. So we've outlined that, given our fiduciary responsibility, and Saul made a comment at one of the, I think it was Investor Day, if we as the officer team of Telstra were to just put the money out there and bid, we ought to be shot by our shareowners. We have a fiduciary responsibility, and we take it very seriously. We are requiring a commitment to no further separation of Telstra. Access to the $4.7 billion the government's put on reasonable terms that are acceptable. And then this issue about the regulatory environment, it's going to have to be legislated, because history shows that you cannot count on any kind of certainty in that environment. We have to have that. Now, there's been this discussion, this paper, and I had the opportunity to visit with Dr. Porter, but I can tell you, if the ticket to play on national broadband is the divestiture of our HFC and Foxtel assets, then it's not worth the price. It's a marginal investment at best. And we can build it better than anybody can, my personal viewpoint and professional. And if we are going to have trouble building it and getting a return on it, everybody else will as well. So we're not going to make a marginal investment and give up the kind of asset that we have with Foxtel. We'll let somebody else build it. The chairman's explained. He's been out. Donald McGauchie's been out speaking to a lot of the issues, so I'm not going to cover them in detail again. But what I do want to talk about is from another perspective, and that's mine, my personal perspective of a guy who has spent now in his 39th year in the industry, building networks, working across all the various aspects of a telecommunications corporation. And it's not an academic exercise. It is for many, even some in this room. It's great debate. David Quilty's predecessor, Phil, you know, he used to love this stuff. You know, and he and Maha had some interesting interchanges. I won't even attempt to debate him. I'm just the plumber. I build the stuff. I know how it works. In the last 3 years, we've built the world's largest and fastest NextG wireless network, currently operating over 14 megabits a second. At the end of this month, we'll be at 21 megabits per second. By the end of next year, we'll be at 42, and in 2011-12 timeframe, we'll be at 1 gigabit. And that network covers 99% of the population today. And we did it in record time. So we know how to build things. We built one of the largest IP networks, and that IP network's up and running today. So we know how to do this. So it's the planning, it's the experience, the know-how, and a proven track record, and oh yes, the financial capacity and wherewithal to do it, particularly in the economy today, globally, and the availability of financing. We have put, in our response, $5 billion of our shareholders' money on the table. We're not asking any banks, we're not asking anybody else to finance it. We'll put $5 billion of our own money there. I'm still waiting to hear from all the various bidders where and how much, where they're getting it, and how much are they paying for it, and when are they going to disclose it. When they do the comparison, you know, the complexity and scale of this is unmatched. So you can talk about BT, you can talk about Singapore, you can talk about Korea, you can talk about Tokyo. Nothing matches what you're talking about building here. Every one of those, including in the U.S., and I'm a U.S. citizen, so I'm very familiar with Fios, Verizon's product, and UVerse, or what used to be called Lightspeed when it was SBC before it became AT&T, that, you know, they've built in the metropolitan areas, high density, and the Fios service is outstanding. And to Jeff's point, AT&T is struggling. You know, it's not easy to do. The service issues are horrendous. Driving IPTV, as the good doctor refers to it. The video is very unforgiving, much less so than voice is. When you get pixelation, when you get interferers into the network, and you try to trace them down, you get a pretty bad customer experience if you're not careful. So the degree of difficulty is going to be unprecedented in this. If Telstra were to build it, our engineering plans are we will deploy more fiber on the next generation network than Telstra has put in place over the last 25 years. And the government would like it done in 5 years. That's one hell of a lot of fiber. It's got to be manufactured. By the way, none of it's manufactured here. It's got to be shipped. It's got to get it in the country, and you have to have the equipment and the know-how of how to place it, where to place it, and all the logistics that are involved. We're going to put tens of thousands of new nodes in. These nodes are high-tech cabinets, lots of electronics on them. They have to be handled very carefully. They all require power. I'm sure everybody in this room, if we asked you, we have a choice of putting that node in your yard or your neighbor's yard or somebody a block over, that you're going to raise your hand and say, give it to me and put it in my yard. There's going to be a lot of issues there. So that's just the physical build. The cutover. We're going to have to cut thousands of people daily, every single day, 365 days a year for the length of the project, and try to do it without disrupting their service, disrupting other people's service, and maintaining their capability to communicate, whether it's for an emergency, 000, their normal voice communication, or their data communication. So we have to ensure continuity. It's not going to be easy to do. It's not an easy task. So we have a workforce that's highly skilled. When we announced in 2005, we talked about a $210 million incremental investment in our training. And we've been investing in our training and our technicians and our tools and our capabilities, and we have a workforce that's capable to do it and currently skilled to do it. We know where our network's at because it's Telstra's network that everybody's talking about. We know where all the cables are at. We know all of the data. We know all of the specifics of how those wires run, where they're at, where the ducts are, whether they're occupied, not occupied, whether they're reserved or not reserved. There's a whole bunch of stuff that's going to go into this, And by the way, our workforce is out there every single day across this nation building as we talk today. So we have a team with years of experience doing that. Now, there's a couple of idiotic ideas out there. And they want to cut me off, but I'm going to hit them hard, okay? Separation. Separation has not worked anywhere. It won't work here. It hasn't worked for any of the large companies. Look at BT and the value destruction. Look at the lack of investment, and they're trying to get their fiber program going. 21CN is dead in the water right now. New Zealand's not having a lot of success, nor anywhere where separation's been talked about. It will not work. Subloop unbundling, which is the bigger issue. If you engage in subloop unbundling and start putting cabinets willy-nilly out there and have multiple players, the midpoint interjection that's going to happen in this network will impact all users of the network in those neighborhoods. And when your neighbor turns on a machine and it's not properly filtered and it knocks everybody out that's trying to do any kind of IPTV, video conferencing, any kind of data transmission, and then they turn it off and you have to reboot your modems to get things back up, or it keeps happening and it's an intermittent case, you're going to have a hard time doing that. So finally, how are you going to take a network, and networks are, for a finished service, and we talk about finished services, a whole series of elements end to end. Where are you going to break it up? How are you going to find faults in it? We have enough issues today with people pointing fingers at each other as to whose problem it is. And that's mostly in the business environment. Wait now till it goes to all of the consumers. How are you going to isolate the trouble? How are you going to find it? How are you going to fix it? Who's going to dispatch on it? What's going to happen during forest fires or the wild brush fires? What's going to happen during flooding? Who's going to be accountable, and how are they going to be accountable? How's 000 going to work? How's your national defense system going to work? How are your financial institutions going to work? Somebody better really think through how they want this stuff to work, because you're on, I'm where Jeff is. You're about to embark on something, and it feels that way to those of us that are watching it carefully, on something that you will regret, and it will take a couple decades to fix once you finally realize you broke it. So that's where I'm at on the issue.